It is Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Matthew Moore.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, the challenges of keeping up with a family-owned farm.
We always ask people to share. They do. We open the gates. Folks come. It's kind of neat.
Plus, a $2 million grant is designed to bolster the number of nurses in Arkansas.
Actually, through the Office of Skills Development, they pay the tuition for these students. So the state is actually paying the tuition for these students to go through high school for the practical nursing program.
And our militant grammarian brings a list of the most often misspelled words.
I know you're really going to love my quiz, the hardest words to spell in the English language.
First, the news from NPR. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. I'm Matthew Moore, Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF Public Radio. Later on our show, we learn more about research on food allergies and a $2 million grant to continue that work. That's in about 10 minutes. First, though, as the weather is finally warming up, outdoor activities are becoming more popular, including strawberry picking. Ozarks at Large's Grace Henley checks out a small local farm in the middle of Fayetteville.
Strawberry picking is in full swing at the Reagan Family Farm. Located right off of MLK, it's about a five-minute drive from the University of Arkansas campus. You'd never know you were in the middle of Fayetteville because this farm is like a safe haven, surrounded by nature. They open their gates to the community and allow them to enjoy the simple pleasures of picking strawberries straight off the vine. Customers are able to use their drive-thru that goes straight through the barn and take home packaged strawberries picked by the crew. Bill Reagan is the owner of the farm, and he gives a tour of the land and shows how his crew handpicks the strawberries.
My brother Pete and I, we built this rack. We've got a crew that comes in. We pick by hand. Of course, I work all the time. So Pete drives the tractor, and we have two people over every row. So we'll do three rows at a time.
Bill operates this farm while still working at his other job full time. He's able to leave it in the hands of his wife, Sheila, while he's gone. This strawberry season has been different than years prior, though, due to variables the Reagan family couldn't control.
This isn't the best strawberry season because we got our plants delivered to us late. It's very critical on strawberries. You have to get them planted on time for your latitude. And this one is, our latitude is the third week of September. And we got our plants the second week in October. And we got them in the third week of October, so we're a month late.
Planting just a month late put the entire patch at risk. Bill shares a study done by the University of Arkansas that shows just how crucial it is to get the strawberries planted on time.
Down at the farm in the River Valley, planted a row of all the varieties on time. Came in a week later, planted a row, another week later, and another week later. 20% difference in yield. We're going to be lucky to get half crop. That really hurts. This was beyond our control.
To avoid planting late in the future, Bill is looking to take things into his own hands.
So we're looking at doing a few things where we might grow some of our own plants, where if they're going to be late that season, we can have our own and get them in the ground on time.
Bill says the trajectory of how long the season is based on one major factor.
We're really going to depend on the weather this season to be cool and somewhat arid, and that'll make the season go on longer so we can recruit. When it hits 92 degrees, you've got a month. The blooms, the plant cannot get the blooms enough water when it gets above 92 for that bloom to turn into a strawberry. It uses that water to survive. So the longer it'll stay cooler, the better for us. Last year, we picked 9 weeks. We picked strawberries for 9 weeks, and it was wonderful.
This year, the weather has mostly worked in favor of strawberry season, and though Bill couldn't say an exact prediction of how long the season will last, he has an idea.
Every day that stays cool. So we've been picking since the 6th of April, so You know, we're almost 3 weeks in. So, I mean, we're looking at least 7 weeks, and we're probably looking at 8 weeks. So, yeah, not bad.
Like any small family business, getting the word out about open hours can be a struggle. A Google search of Reagan Family Farm brings you to a Facebook page. Along with Instagram, this is their only source of marketing. Since the farm doesn't have consistent hours, you'll see a daily post from Bill with information explaining if the farm is open for business or not that day, and the hours for it. There's also a phone number with a pre-recorded voicemail that details the date and also the hours they're open or not that day.
It's Tuesday, April the 30th, and you've reached Reagan Family Farm. We are closed today, but we'll open in the morning, May the 1st at 10 a.m. Please come and see us. Thank you.
This has been the way of the business since they've opened, and it's actually worked in their favor.
I pound social media. We're lucky enough to be right where we are, and we've got 20,000 followers. We always ask people to share. They do. We open the gates. Folks come. It's kind of neat. I was talking with Sheila about that the other day, and it's going, this is weird, because it's kind of automatic, you know. You just advertise, hey, we're open at 10, and open the gate, and here they come.
The Strawberry Association has also played a big part in the success of the Reagan Family Farm. It's taught them skills they've been able to apply to their farm and see rewarding results.
In our strawberry meetings also, we, you know, there's marketing, there's, you know, different techniques on planting. There's different varieties. There's what to spray for what. This year at one of our meetings, in Arkansas, you can't grow a strawberry organically. You just cannot do it. Our humidity is too high. The funguses will just get you. So it's always a spray regimen. And you spray very little, but you spray it in a 110-gallon tank, and it takes two of those to spray your field. So you spray regularly. Well, this year we learned that, hey, we don't have to spray regularly. They've done some research, and you spray after a rain, because it's only good on the flower. It's not good for anything else. It's good on the flower.
What separates this strawberry farm from others is the fact that you can handpick the strawberries and actually eat them right off the vine. No wash needed.
And I've got a lot of my mother in me, and she was a huge environmentalist. I didn't like spraying anyway. The very first year we did this, I went, I'm not spraying, and I didn't. And we got away with it because it was year one. But year two, you get some funguses that start coming in because they're attracted to this. So last year was nice and arid, and I sprayed twice. We had very little problem. So we figured that out all on our own last year as well. I like folks to come out here and be able to pick a strawberry and feed it to their kid, don't worry about anything. And we're small enough, we're scaled small enough that we don't have to do that. You know, the big boys, they've got a lot of investment. We have some investment, but we don't have to do that. We don't spray insecticides. I mean, my goodness, we're outdoors. Bugs live out here. I think I sprayed a miticide one time. And those come on in the winter, and they like to get up underneath the plant. And if you get an infestation of them, they'll really hamper your production. So what we do is we weed a lot. We hand weed while we're picking.
The Reagan Family Farm is deeply rooted in family and community, as Bill and his 12 siblings grew up on this farm. He holds his family values and commitment to the community close to his heart, even when it comes to weed eating.
And that's another thing. That lady called me and said, hey, we'd like to come get some strawberries. And I said, oh, we're not doing a whole bunch of you pick. And we got to talking. And she said, well, can my kids do anything on your farm? And I went, yes. Yes, you can. And that saved us from having to spray an herbicide underneath the blueberries. And I said, would y'all come do that? And I mean, they've got 11 kids. And we try to keep this farm pretty. We want folks to enjoy themselves while they're here. You wouldn't think this is really hard work, but boy, strawberries are hard work.
Out of the 12 siblings, he was the one that inherited the farm. Bill's mother told him she went down the line starting with the oldest sibling and asked them if they wanted the farm. And everyone said no until she got to Bill, the second youngest, who said yes. Come to find out, Bill asked his mother on her deathbed if she really asked all of his siblings. She said no. She only ever asked Bill because she said she knew the farm belonged to him. Bill says his family is still involved with the farm and will come help out no matter what it is. Grace Plunkett, 21-year-old Fayetteville resident and regular customer, says you can really feel the family-friendly environment the second you walk in.
I've been coming for weeks now because they don't just try and get you in and out. They take time to actually get to know their customers, and they genuinely care about them. I always leave happier than when I arrived.
The work isn't done for Reagan Family Farm when strawberry season is over, because blueberry picking is right around the corner. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Grace Henley.
The Arkansas Center for Food Allergy Research at Arkansas Children's Research Institute recently announced they've been awarded $2.3 million from the National Institute of Health to continue their work on food allergy treatment. Dr. Stacy Jones is the director of the Arkansas Children's Food Allergy Program. She says a major part of her work is to provide education not just to the kids with food allergies, but the adults in their lives as well.
There is so much fear and misconception and mythical thinking and anxiety around food allergy. And it really, I think education and knowledge gives us all power. It also is so important for the general public who may not have a food allergy to understand what these patients and families go through. The world really does feel like a landmine for so many, and some people navigate it very carefully and great, and others become enabled by it and have a hard time. So I think that is a focus that it really is a positivity that comes out of having a large program.
Tell me a little bit about the Arkansas Center for Food Allergy Research. What do you do there, and why do we need a state-specific allergy research center?
You know, I'll start with the second question of why do we need a state-specific or even a regional. We even think of ourselves regionally because of the 10 or 12 centers that are involved in this. There are not any in our exact region. And I think it's so important because it takes anywhere from 10 to 15 or even in some cases 18 or 20 years. So the average is 10 to 15 years to get a new drug from drug concept through the FDA for approval for patients to actually use. So I think the value of this is, and having a statewide center, is that our patients have and families have the opportunity to have early access to promising medications and devices and, in our case, medications that may really change their disease course and provide better protection for them. And then also, it really helps us grow our resources to be able to advance the science and the discovery in the field, to be able to advance the field for all people, whether that's in our state, in our country, or around the world globally.
Let's kind of take it out of the abstract here and kind of into the concrete. I have a one-year-old son who I introduced to peanuts and peanut butter recently, and he had a reaction. When we think about maybe like when I was a kid, 25, 30 years ago, and I got introduced to peanut butter, let's say I would have had a reaction then. What does care and treatment look like from when I was a kid 30 years ago to what my son might have now?
Yeah, I think the care and treatment, and even as we call it, emerging treatments or emerging therapies that are in clinical studies, all the way through clinical trials, looks completely different over the last 15 to 20 years. We've made great strides. We have the capacity to be able to treat young children through full-on adults, as you would say, to be able to provide active therapy for them. For peanut, we actually have two therapies on the that have been approved through the FDA And both of those, we had the benefit of being instrumental in making that happen and being involved with. And one of those is called Palforzia, which is a peanut oral immunotherapy. That was approved in 2020. And the thing that a lot of people don't know is we actually started that therapy here and with a colleague that used to be here at Duke. And so that was very rewarding. And then most recently in February, we have had a medication called Xolair or omalizumab that is the first medication for food allergy approved for children that have peanut allergy or multiple food allergies, so both. And this drug in particular is very exciting because we can treat many different types of food allergy and not just peanut, and down to age 1 year. So the field has changed dramatically, and I can tell you that looking forward, we're going to be having, Matthew, many more of these conversations over the next 2 to 5 years. We're going to have a lot of new medications and therapies that are going to be on the market or close to being on the market. And the other thing that we know a lot about we know more about prevention, and that introducing foods early, even in the first 4 to 6 months of life, can be very beneficial to kids before their immune system gets too allergic, so to speak, and ready to be reactive. So the field is changing quicker than we can keep up with, it seems like, some days.
You say that in this next phase of funding, that this will help you to create better opportunities for global implementation of the most effective therapeutic and prevention options. You spoke just a second ago about a couple of different drug options. What sort of advances are you hoping to make?
I hope we'll have yet more and better new therapies that have improved safety for patients like your son, or for, across the ages and life spectrum, and make it easier and safer to get therapies. But I also think we have a very large birth cohort study right now called the Sunbeam study that we are enrolling 3,000 kids in, infants, actually moms before the babies are born, and following them through age 3 right now and likely through age 6. And these 3,000 babies are going to teach us about how to have early targets for prevention and to be able to predict who will develop food allergy and how to hopefully intervene before a reaction occurs. And also will give us targets for those kids that are going to have problems, targets to intervene. So it sounds futuristic, but I think we're going to have better predictive factors in the next 7 years in the lifespan of this grant, that this next iteration of the grant that we're just starting. The other thing that we have a very much a center-specific goal is to diversify the children and the adults and families that we enroll in our studies. Many, many, many studies in food allergy and in other diseases across the country are limited in their racial and ethnic diversity, limited in the socioeconomic status or the number of kids that live in rural environments, for instance. And we really have been intentional in the last few years, and will continue to do that even more so, to try to reach different populations so that we can not only understand how different types of people affect or respond to therapy, but also how to reach those children and families and to make a difference for them and not be limited to certain groups.
Yeah. And as I think, as I'm based here in Northwest Arkansas, there's a huge Latino community. There's a huge Marshallese community as well. And so, you know, and I imagine those groups aren't necessarily always known to be the sort of folks who go to an allergist, right?
Well, and more than that, those groups are often, because of language, for instance, it's harder to enroll them in studies. And so in our Sunbeam trial, our our the study that will continue on in this next phase of funding. We have been intentional here to keep a bilingual, about four or five bilingual staff members, so we can enroll families that are primary Spanish speakers. And it has been hugely rewarding for us and hugely rewarding for those families to be included. And it's something that's not lost on us. It's something that we know that we can learn from those families. And so those are the barriers. It's not that families or physicians and care teams want to make that divide. Just language and distance sometimes help us get there inadvertently. And that's something we really are intending to work on.
Dr. Stacy Jones is the director of the Arkansas Children's Food Allergy Program in Little Rock. We spoke over the phone yesterday.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. We've documented the shortage of medical professionals in Arkansas several times on this program. Now, a new $2.1 million grant distributed to Northwest Arkansas Community College and shared with area hospitals is designed to expand the college's nursing program and put more new nurses into the workforce. The money is being shared with Northwest Health Systems and Mercy and is being directed toward salaries and equipment to help educate new nurses. The grant is part of the Arkansas Linking Industry to Grow Nurses, or ALIGN, program. Yesterday, I visited with Mark Wallenmeyer, Dean of Health Professionals at NWAC, about the grant.
It's going to enable Mercy to build a sim lab specifically for students rather than their employees. Now their employees will be using it too, but it's for students. For us, it's going to be mostly equipment. If you can imagine 200 students throughout the year practicing on, you know, 10 to 15 mannequins, they tend to wear out. So we have to replace them, and they are very expensive. Some of them are upwards of $100,000 or more. So replacing that equipment, we're also going to be hiring two practical nursing faculty. And that's going to be a new program that we're starting in the spring. That was actually something with the state. The Office of Skills Development wanted us to start a practical nursing program in the high school. And so we've also partnered with Don Tyson School of Innovation down in Springdale to offer a practical nursing track through the high school. But we also, in order to do it through the high school, for all the different regulations that we have to go through, we have to have a college program too. So we'll be offering practical nursing starting in the fall at Don Tyson School of Innovation. We'll start in the spring here on the Bentonville campus of NWAC.
Do you know yet how it will look partnering with the School of Innovation, the Tyson School of Innovation, and here? I mean, so I'm guessing that can mean juniors, seniors, and high school can begin the program?
That's correct. They'll start in their junior year. I'm going from memory here on this one, sure. But they'll start in their junior year doing some prerequisites, and then they'll start the spring of their junior year with the actual nursing courses. They'll graduate from high school with practical nursing license, or let me put it this way, they will be eligible to sit for the practical nursing license.
That's amazing. It at is. 18.
We just had a student this past May, a week ago, that graduated nursing school at age 20. All of our prerequisites for our nursing program, for the practical nursing, all of those can be done in the high school. They're done as concurrent credit. And then the student technically could graduate from high school with all of the prerequisites done, start nursing school in the summer, finish the next summer, so graduate at 18 from high school, finish nursing school, depending on how their age falls. They could be a nurse at 19 or 20. And that we did have one of those happen this year.
So how does it work if you're doing this in high school? Are you paying some money to do it? Because, you know, high school, public schools mm-hmm. don't have tuition.
Right.
So is this a less expensive way for a student to do it?
Actually, through the Office of Skills Development, they pay the tuition for these students. So the state is actually paying the tuition for these students to go through high school for the practical nursing program. And they're also paying for the instructor. The state is really dedicated to this.
The state as a whole, but Northwest Arkansas in particular, has a shortage when it comes to medical professionals and nurses. So I imagine that there is a job market waiting for these young people.
We can't put them out fast enough. I mean, literally, it's they graduate, they'll have a job before they graduate. And then 95% of our students will stay in this area. So the more that we can actually put out here at NWAC, they're going to have a job when they get out. COVID had a big hit on nursing. A lot of nurses left the field. We've got a lot of aging out. And so students would get out of nursing school during COVID. They'd go work 1 year and they'd say, no. But that was a really bad time because of COVID and the situation that they were in. But we're rebounding. The nursing field is starting to rebound, and this is just one step towards it.
You mentioned the mannequins that get quite the workout with the students. I've talked to a few people recently about what these mannequins do. Mm-hmm. Tell me exactly what you can use these mannequins to learn.
These mannequins, we have ones that are just very plain. They don't do anything but just lay there. But they simulate a patient. We put different wigs on them. We'll put, you know, men's hair on it. We'll put elderly hair on it. We'll put young hair, long hair, all those different things so that they can actually simulate what it looks like. We have mannequins all the way up to what we call high-definition mannequins. And those high-definition mannequins, we control them with a computer. They will breathe. They have a pulse. They can blink their eyes. They can move their arms. They can basically do everything. And so when a nursing student goes in with these high-definition mannequins, they're actually acting with a patient or interacting with a patient. We even have one that will give birth. So all nurses have to go through that. So we have a birthing mannequin here that we can load the fetus in and put a cord around the neck. We can put a breech. We can simulate all the different scenarios of birth. And all the students will have to check off on that.
Not everyone when they're 16, 17, 18 is thinking about going into nursing. Sometimes you don't know what you want to do. We've been concentrating on the very youngest on the education scale, but it's not just teenagers or people in their early 20s that would be eligible.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody is eligible for this. In fact, some of the best nurses that we put out are second career. They're doing it on the side. They've got a part-time job or whatever they need, and they're going through and they're actually getting their nursing degree. Or let's take, for example, one of the tracks that we have is our LPN to RN track, and it's the paramedic to RN track as well. So what happens with those, if you are a licensed LPN or a licensed paramedic, you can actually go through this program, one of the tracks that we have, and finish your degree in 1 year. So you can become a paramedic and an RN at the same time, and we have a lot of those, especially with those that are going on the helicopters with the air flights. They need a paramedic and an RN. Mm-hmm. So there's a big track. We do have a lot of different demographics in the program. We're concentrating on the younger, you know, generation. That's typically who we get, but we get a lot of the second gen. I think the biggest thing is that, you know, this is linking industry. We are working as partners. That's the biggest thing that we have to do here. We listen to our partners. What do they need? Or if they're needing something, we try and do as best we can to add it. This is a good initiative with the Align grant to listen to industry. What do they need? We've partnered with Mercy. We've partnered with Northwest Health System. And it's just a great partnership. I mean, we can't work better together. It's amazing.
Also, I want to ask about this building because if you're not a student, if you're not faculty, if you don't live in Bentonville or get off this exit, you may not know about this building and what's inside it. What is inside?
So this building is 11 years old now. I've been here for 8 years. And this building, just our nursing lab, has about $2 million worth of equipment. Everything that they train on in the lab, they use in the hospital. And it's the same thing goes for our EMS and paramedic. Same thing goes for respiratory therapy and our physical therapy, all of our programs. We try and use what is used in the hospital. With that said, this building can actually be operated as a hospital. If you remember the Joplin tornado 13, 14 years ago, wiped out Mercy up there. We have an emergency operation plan with Mercy Rogers here in Rogers. And if something were to happen, they can basically take over our building with 48 hours notice and operate as a hospital. So this building is so advanced that we can actually operate as a hospital if we had to.
Hopefully we'll never have to report about that.
Well, we were put on notice during COVID, but it did not come to the point where they actually needed to take over the building. But yes, yeah, so I hope not. I hope there's not a disaster big enough that they have to use extra space.
Dean, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, anytime.
Mark Wallenmeyer is Dean of Health Professions at Northwest Arkansas Community College. We talked yesterday in a classroom in the Health Professions building on the NWAC campus in Bentonville. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, another effort to bring more nurses into the Arkansas workforce. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith is announcing the return of its Associate of Applied Science nursing degree, meaning there will be another two-year pathway to become an RN in Arkansas. We'll learn more about that on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. Randy Wilburn, the host of the podcast I Am Northwest Arkansas, is celebrating the podcast's fifth birthday by highlighting people in the region who are transplants. In today's excerpt, we hear from Dexter Caffey. He's the founder of Smart Eye Technology, a company who uses facial recognition to protect data. Caffey's move to Northwest Arkansas came on the heels of a rejection into a startup program from a major credit card company. He says the same day he got that rejection, he got an invitation from Startup Junkie to be part of their accelerator program.
So I literally ignored that email and tossed it aside.
Did you really?
I ignored it because I was so frustrated that I just got turned down. I couldn't accept another turn down emotionally. It just wasn't there. And so what happened was a week later, Darian from the Fuel Accelerator program, which, you know, is under the Startup Junkie umbrella, Darian emailed me and said, "Hey, listen, we emailed you last week and we'd really like to take a look at your technology and by Zoom." So I said, "Whoa, this sounds kind of serious." So my wife said, "Dexter, go ahead and apply." I said, "Okay." I went and applied. And then we did a Zoom call. And I said, "Okay, what's the likelihood of me actually getting into this Startup Junkies Fuel Accelerator program?"
Sure.
And, you know, the guy who ran it said, Tom said, "Listen, we have several other people we need to go through. So we can't tell you anything. Just if you'll hear something by the first week in July." First week in July went by, I heard nothing. Second week in July went by, I heard nothing. Third week in July went by, you know, my wife said, "Dexter, have you heard from the Fuel Accelerator program for Startup Junkie?" And I said, "No, it's another turn down." Like I said, this is why I didn't want to apply again. And literally within an hour of me saying that, Darian from a Fuel Accelerator program emailed me, said, "Congratulations, you know, Smart Eye Technology is now in the Fuel Accelerator program." And I said, "Oh my gosh, I couldn't believe the email. It was like a miracle." And so that's how it happened.
Wow. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes that's how what life works though, right? I mean, you get down to the 11th hour and you think, "Oh, well, whatever that dream is, it's probably deferred."
Right.
And in reality, it really wasn't.
It wasn't.
It was just being cooked at the moment. And then it was finally ready for presentation. And that presentation was the phone call where it was like, "Hey, by the way, we want you."
Absolutely.
So that must have felt really good.
It felt extremely. I mean, I was so overjoyed. It was amazing.
Yeah. I love hearing stories like that. But as guess as I back up, though, when I think about this and I think about you came out of Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's a... it's a hub for a lot of reasons. I mean, you got Georgia Tech down there. You've got, it's the seat of government for the state of Georgia. I mean, Georgia is a fast growing state in the South. Atlanta, as we know, I mean, Tyler Perry has a movie studio down there. I mean, they filmed half of the Marvel movie cinema world was filmed down there. I mean, there's a lot of things happening in Atlanta. Were you even remotely concerned about leaving Atlanta and what that represented to come to a place like Northwest Arkansas?
After I came here in August through October of last year, one of the things that I noticed, Northwest Arkansas has a powerful business technology ecosystem. I've never experienced anything like that before in my life. And what I mean by that is companies want to do business with you because you're here and they want to promote and focus on technology startups in Northwest Arkansas. And that was powerful. And again, when I was in Atlanta, like I said, I love Atlanta for what it was, but there was no technology ecosystem when you're just out there on your own. Congratulations, yeah. You started something. Who's going to help you?
Right.
That was the problem I ran into.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you bring up a good point. I mean, obviously the footprint of the area of Atlanta is much larger. You know, you're kind of a small fish in a really big pond, but you come here with the idea for smart eye technology and you instantly become a much bigger fish. And our pond is growing, but it's still small when you compare it to other places, right? But I mean, now what are they saying? They're ascribing a word to this area. They're calling it the heartland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, okay, there's a lot packed into that word.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, when I hear that word, the heartland, I hear potential. I hear opportunity. I hear growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is to me what's really exciting about this area and how you can, it's very fertile ground for you to kind of grow something. Not
Absolutely.
That you can't do it elsewhere.
Right.
Right. But this is this time and this place and this moment, it's a good place to be to start a business.
Absolutely. And one of the things I noticed too, Randy, is that it's just in the fabric of folks here in NWA. It's in their fabric to have a strong ecosystem. When you go to the bigger cities, it's not in their fabric.
Yeah.
You're just out there all by yourself. It's great that you started something, but there's no ecosystem to actually that you feed upon and people feed upon you. It just doesn't exist in a lot of those big cities. And you're out there hoping and wishing and you're in a big, beautiful place with all these beautiful lights, but you're not in an ecosystem. And that's a problem. And so if you're a startup, a lot of those big cities, good luck.
Yeah. And, you know, you're absolutely right about that. And we've had other startups on this podcast. I'm thinking of Ox and several others that certainly that serve the CPG marketplace and Walmart, because we have that big company up there in Bentonville mm-hmm. that everybody's familiar with, that Fortune 1, which makes it nice, right? Because if you're serving them, you've got the biggest company right in your backyard that you can go to and say, hey, we've got this amazing product. We have this amazing service that we think will benefit and enhance what you're already doing to be the number one resource for retail.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other spaces, right? And even in the space that you're in, when you talk about biometric data, data protection, facial recognition, this is all still new.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in the early phases of this. So we
Absolutely.
Have some, I can open my phone with my face, but that's about it.
Right.
I can't do anything. I know there are iris scans and things of that nature that will let me into certain biometric markers that will let me into certain buildings
and
other secure environments, but I don't really have access to those on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And that was exactly why I created Smart Eye Technology, was really to create a biometric authentication platform using continuous facial tracking. So in other words, once you've been authenticated, let's say you open up your Chrome browser.
Yep.
And once you open up your Chrome browser, it's only going to, number one, open up to your face and stay open up to your face. So if I were to walk behind you, Randy, while you had that Chrome browser up, looking at, let's say, something corporate that you're in, a corporate platform, a WW, whatever that is, corporate platform. As soon as I walk up behind you, say, hey, Randy, what are you looking at? It'll recognize my face and block all that data immediately. You see a big white screen that says warning, multiple viewers. Why? Because it saw my face and my eyes should not be looking at your data.
And that's kind of like how, not that a lot of industrial espionage happens on a plane, but I can tell you the number of times that I've sat on a plane and side-eyed somebody that was working on something or writing a book or fill in the blanks or
Absolutely.
Working on a spreadsheet with a lot of sensitive data and information. And they didn't have that little screen up that you typically have to put over your screen so that if you're looking at it from an angle, it kind of blurs or blocks things out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's that technology from the 1990s, that screen protector.
Yeah.
So again, you take that, you rip that screen off or you move that screen protector. I mean, it's just something physical, but we're in that software base. So in other words, when a hacker tries to access your Chrome browser, by going remote. Have you ever had somebody work on your computer remotely and you cross your arms?
Oh, my God.
Then you see,
hoping for the best, right?
Exactly.
I mean, and I have very I only have faith every now and then because actually some companies typically will, what a lot of people don't realize is that most companies build a back door, meaning that there was a program many years ago called Log Me In that would allow you to log into a program, a remote computer. A lot of times now that these companies, when they build the software that they build, they already build in a key that you have to turn it on, but it's there and it's actually always there. I only learned that because the company that I was using for my accounting, it's called FreshBooks, they have that key and that capability. And all I do is I hit like shift command key K, and then they ask me to give them the number that's there. They authorize me and authenticate me. Then they can take control of my computer if I give them permission to do it.
And hackers use that same technology to do the same thing. It may not be that particular technology, but they use tools such as that to access. So in other words, think about it. Think about what you have inside of your Google Chrome. All your passwords, all of your usernames are saved for your bank accounts, your Netflix accounts, your Facebook accounts. They're all saved in there automatically for you. And so when the computer, when a hacker accesses that Chrome browser, it just thinks it's you. So all those cookies are saved and everything opens up to you. So the passwords are there, the usernames are there. And so I have the same access as you do. Yeah. I'm just remotely.
Yeah.
So what SmartEye says is unless you have Randy's face, you can't open up my Chrome browser.
Wow. So this original application for SmartEye, is this is more of a B2B play or is it both B2B and B2C?
It's actually both. Originally, we're starting this with the B2B market because we've created an actual admin panel. So in other words, the system administrator can actually go in and decide which computers that they want to put this on, which Chrome browsers. 100 employees, 500 employees, 1,000 employees, they decide that information. And they also have other controls as well. So we built that in really for companies originally, but we do have part for individuals that will be coming out shortly after that.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, because I could see how like I would want to use something like that and have access to it because it would just, you know, provide me with a little bit more peace of mind. I think nowadays with the dark web, with the identity theft being at the level that it's at now, it's like everybody has to worry about
everybody,
this, you know,
and that's one of the problems. That's one of the problems, Randy. I mean, if you think about it, you know, once somebody gets access to that Chrome browser, they've got your life.
Dexter Caffey, founder of SmartEye Technology, speaking with Randy Wilburn, the host of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. You can find the full episode, as well as the entire slate of past conversations, at IamNorthwestArkansas.com, KUAF.com, or wherever you already listen to podcasts.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we head up to Markham Hill. A new boutique hotel is setting up shop in this part of Fayetteville, and some locals are worried about the future of the land.
What happened on Markham Hill, as an example, was a travesty.
Ozarks at Large's Jack Travis brings us that report tomorrow at noon and 7 on KUAF and at 7 p.m. on Little Rock Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. It is time to talk with our militant grammarian, Catherine Schultz, once again. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thanks, Kyle. As a radio journalist, you aren't too plagued by spelling mistakes. As long as the person reading your copy can understand the word, you're good, all right?
However, it's 2024.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to put everything on the web.
Right.
So this advantage I had for decades where I would tease my print friends. You know, they would say, oh, you've got to pronounce that name, but yeah, you've got to spell it. So now, and this is, it's caught me a couple times because I write, if it's a story for me, I'll write on our shared document for me because I'm going to be reading that.
Sure.
But somebody else is taking that copy and making the web copy.
Sure.
And so now I have to So
those darn readers out
right?
there. Well, then I know you're really going to love my quiz based on the Reader's Digest website, The Hardest Words to Spell in the English Language.
I'm just going to warn you, I'm going to go ofer on this. Goose egg. Goose egg time. I am not a good speller. Ask anyone who knows me.
We'll see. The first one is...
Am I allowed to write these down?
That's why I wanted you to have pen and paper.
Okay.
The first one is usually brought up more often as a misuse based on its definition than as spelling, but evidently it's a tough one for many folks to spell. Nauseous.
N. A. U. S. E. O. U. S.
You got it.
Ha!
See, I told you.
All right.
It can be tricky to remember what order in which its several vowels go. Even if you've got them straight, you may still second guess yourself about the consonants. The SH sound makes it sound as though there should be a C in there somewhere, as in conscious.
Right. Yeah.
In case listeners don't know about the usage confusion I referred to, many purists insist that nauseous means causing nausea, while nauseated means feeling sick.
Right.
As a journalist, Kyle, my spelling is pretty good. Plus, I'm not hesitant at all to look up a word. And, of course, spell check helps me out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, do you know how to spell the word describing what the doctor does to your eyes that make you unable to drive right away?
Dilate.
Mm-hmm.
I know the word.
How
okay.
How do you spell it?
Here we go. D-I-A-L-A-T-E. That's not right. What am I missing? D-I-A-L-A-T. Dilate.
And that's why people misspell it. And I had never known that I didn't know how to spell it until I looked at this thing.
So what am I missing?
There is no A. It's like athlete. There
Wait,
is
it's
no
dilate?
A. It's dilate.
I'm giving myself half credit on that one.
Even when you say dilate, you hear an A in there.
Dilate.
Dilate.
Okay.
All right. Dilate.
All right. I don't feel so bad about this one yet.
No.
All right.
With only six letters, dilate really shouldn't be one of the hard words to spell, except for the way people, including us, mispronounce it.
Huh.
Many people pronounce three full syllables dilate.
Yeah, dilate.
Leading to the adding an extra A while spelling it. And dilate ain't a word.
Dilate. Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay. Our next word is indict.
Ooh. I-N-D-I-C-T.
Correct. Silent T, right?
Yeah.
With indict popping up as a buzzword in today's political climate, some find themselves doing a double take when they see it written out. Though the word is pronounced I-N-D-I-T-E, it has a silent C. Interestingly, the legal term, once first used about 1620, is a Latin variation on an earlier word that was spelled, guess how?
I-N-D-I-T-E,
That's right.
Why be easy?
To make things even more confusing, with the I-T-E is a word. It means to write or compose, which I've never seen it used that way.
I haven't either.
Kyle, what does liquefy mean?
Well, something sort of melts or becomes liquid. Mm-hmm. Something that was solid becomes liquid.
To make or become liquid. Right. Now spell it.
L-I-Q-U-I-D-I-F-Y?
No, not even close.
All right, I'm living up to the hype now.
Pronounce what you wrote down.
Oh, liquidity or
yeah, something like that.
I'm thinking real estate. Yeah. Okay, liquefy.
Liquefy.
Oh, that does not count as a try. Okay,
no,
liquefy.
Okay, I'm fine.
L-I-Q-U-I-F-Y.
Now, that's how the correct spelling is tricky because so many other words that sound like it aren't spelled similarly. Pacify is spelled I-F-Y. Clarify, specify. Oh, the first, yeah. Rectify. Virtually every other word that follows this spelling pattern uses I-F-Y, but this is E-F-Y.
Okay. I don't get any credit for this one. That's
L-I-Q-U-E-F-Y. Okay.
Huh.
Okay. Another word that suffers from mispronunciation. Kyle, what's not quite ice cream that is usually fruit-flavored and often an ingredient in party punch?
Sherbet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you're mispronouncing it.
Sherbet?
How would you pronounce it? I mean, how would you spell it?
S-H-E-R-B-E-T.
That's how you spell it.
Yeah.
But why are you putting an R before the T?
I didn't the first time. Sherbet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is sherbet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like S-H-E-R-B-I-T is how it's pronounced.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next, what do you call a person who pins a stage presentation?
Here we go. P-L-A-Y-W-R-I-G-H-T.
That's correct.
And it's because it's got an ancient origin.
Mm-hmm. It's just plain counterintuitive. You write a play, so why aren't people who write plays called play W-R-I-T-E-S or playwriters? It's because when the word was coined in the late 1600s, people who produced plays were considered workers.
Right.
Who wrought.
Correct.
Who wrought plays rather than wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
Our next word is one I always have to rely upon spell check to be sure I'm right. Minuscule.
Ooh. M-I-N-I. M-I-N-S-C. I'm spelling it the obvious way, so I'm obviously going to be wrong. M-I-N-I-S-C-U-L-E, but there's probably three silent H's in there somewhere. What'd I miss?
Well, the logic would have us spell it minuscule. It's not related to mini or miniature, but actually comes from the Latin word minus. So it starts out minus.
Oh, that's right. M-I-N-U-S-C-U-L-E.
Right.
I don't get half credit for that.
That's what I say. Yeah. I have to look it up when I do it.
Ooh.
Here's another word that defies logic to spell. Ingenious means very clever and intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
A genius is very clever, intelligent person. So how do you spell ingenious? The hint was hard to spell.
I-N-G-E-N-I-O-U-S.
Yeah, very
hot
good.
Hot damn. Look at that.
And so what is it, what's not in that word that people make a mistake?
Well, because genius is G-E-N-I-U-S.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's not
right.
Like, then
right.
Alas, the final syllable of ingenious is not spelled like genius.
Genius.
It dates back to a Latin word, ingenious, that's what it looks like to me, meaning natural disposition. And yet another of the illogical variety.
Mm-hmm.
Can you spell sacrilegious?
Short answer is no, but let's give it a try. S-A-C.
Uh-huh.
See, what you want to do now is go religious, but obviously you're not going to do that. Also, there are people out there listening right now who are spelling all of these just correctly and just can't believe I can't do this. R.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I want to put an E there. Let's go I. S-C-R-I-L-G-O-U-S.
Except you left out an E after the L.
Oh, I'm giving myself half credit
for
that.
No, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
A sacrilegious act is disrespectful of something of a religious significance, but the word religious is not going to help you spell it.
No.
Sacrilegious comes from sacrilege, not from religious.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's similar to another linguistic, the similarity between those is another linguistic coincidence.
Right.
The word sacrilege came to be from the Latin sacra or sacred and legere, I guess, meaning to gather or steal. I learned a trick how to spell sacrilegious. Think of this sentence. Sacrilegious people really rile up the evangelicals. How do you think that would help you spell this?
Rile. Mm-hmm. R-I-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. There are more of these, Kyle. We'll pick them up next time.
Oh, fantastic.
And we'll leave our logic behind.
Our Middleton Gravarian is Catherine Churlds.
Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, housed in the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville. Contributors to today's show included Grace Henley, Randy Wilburn, and of course, our Militant Grammarian, Catherine Churlds.
Matthew produced today's show inside the Bruce and Ann Applegate News Studio 2. You can find previous editions of our show, individual stories, and a link to subscribe to our free daily newsletter by going to OzarksAtLarge.com. Congratulations to the Arkansas Razorback women's golf team. They finished 10th at the NCAA championships. Big, big season for them.
Yeah, yeah. It's great to see them playing well, mm-hmm. and a great way to cap off a wonderful season.
Anyone who plays golf well, I don't understand what you're doing. I haven't played in 40 years, and I will not play for another 40.
That's right.
Too frustrating. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Matthew Moore. Be well.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents 360 All-Stars on Tuesday, May 21st at 7 p.m.
This performance features an urban circus of world champion athletes and artists demonstrating their skills in BMX, basketball, breakdancing, beatboxing, acrobatics, drumming, and more. WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets and information.
KUAF is partnering with Old Friend Farms to give away tickets to the Old Friends Music Festival May 24th through the 26th. It includes live music and camping in the Boston Mountains. Full lineup available at oldfriendfarms.com. Giveaway entry at KUAF.com.